This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us...
Glenn Cunningham.
Carol Cunningham.
And I am Diane McConnell. So, lifestyle block. Tell me about it.
Well, we're only just a lifestyle block because we're only 2 and a bit acres. And normally you would think a lifestyle block would be 4 or 5 or more acres. But anyway... We like to call it a lifestyle block because we moved here for the lifestyle. We were living in Lower Hutt, just out of Wellington, and we came on a holiday that had to be abandoned because of bad weather. We were in a camper van, and as we came through Ashurst, the weather changed, so we stayed for the night in the very good campground in Ashurst and did a bit of an explore, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
And we just liked the feel of the place. Then, I'm not quite sure how it worked out, we found a piece of land that was coming up for sale, just bare land. And lo and behold, it seemed affordable. Land in Wellington was way beyond our reach.
When was this?
About 17 years ago, so 2007 or 8 or something like that. Would that be right, Glenn?
Yeah, that's right.
And so we came back up and we had a look at two pieces of land that were for sale, and we put our name on one, went back to Wellington, changed our minds and put our name on the other one that was this one. And then we realised that we had to put our beautiful home up for sale that we'd spent 10 years renovating, but it was time. And so we did that. And then at the weekends, we would come up here and start planting, because there was nothing but paddock grass. Not a tree, not a tree, not a plant. Glenn started fencing, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And then came all the decisions all at once. Where do you put the water tanks? Where do you put the buildings? Where do you put the driveway? Where do you put the electricity? All of those things that have to go into a bare piece of paddock. So we hadn't sold our house, we hadn't put it up for sale, so we decided we could probably build a garage on the piece of land in Ashurst with a sleep out and a little shower room, and we could live in there while we sorted ourselves out. So that's what we did. And I can remember, do you remember, Glenn, you came up for a couple of weekends on your own and sort of camped in the garage. There was no power, no plumbing, but you were fencing and meeting contractors and things like that.
Yeah, that was fun. That was good.
It was
slightly
good.
I was slightly panicked about what we were actually doing, because as Carol said, we were leaving a lovely little cottage and coming up here and starting from scratch, and it was all a bit of a mystery really how everything worked. But you just sort of bumble your way along, and everything sort of fell into place, and people were really nice, and the driver went in, the power went in, and then we lived for, how long do we live in the garage?
About a year.
So we had a bedroom set up in the double car garage, and the little sleep out, which was insulated, was the lounge in Carol's office, because at that stage you were still
working
from Wellington.
Yeah.
So Carol was catching the train, a bit complicated, but I mean, there's a train, so obviously lots of people do it, so I figured that's got to be possible. So Carol was getting the train in the morning down to Wellington.
That's the 20 past 6 in the morning one.
Correct. So I couldn't tell myself I was getting up at 4:45, but I could tell myself I was... I couldn't tell myself I was getting up at 4:45, but I could tell myself that I was getting up at 4:45. 5 seemed a lot gentler than 4.
And then the return journey after work on the way back.
Yeah, and then that get in at 7. But it's good because it was a two-hour journey, so I used to cut it up into 1 hour snoozing, reading, 1 hour laptop out working.
How many days a week?
I only had to go into the office 1 day a week.
Right.
But my job was travelling around New Zealand, and Palmerston North has a good airport. The cost wasn't any more than travelling out of Wellington Airport. So the days that I needed to fly around the country was easy, easy peasy. So that all worked. And you quit your job, didn't you? And you were working here for a few months, and then you found a job to go to locally at the local boarding kennels. So we lived in the garage for a year. When we moved in on moving day, there was still no power. There was still no plumbing.
So you had a garage in a paddock with a drive?
Correct.
And water tanks?
And water tanks. And we had water tanks, but they weren't connected up to the garage.
Okay.
Yeah. And we had to quickly put a gate on the front of the roadway because we had a little dog. And then we realised that when we left the dog at home, he was used to being left outside. There was no shade for him because there wasn't a tree or anything. So we learned that we had to leave the trailer at an angle so little Gus could get under the trailer for the shade. We had a shipping container that we put all our belongings that wouldn't fit into the garage into. And we camped in the garage. It was pretty good fun once we got the power and the plumbing on, but you know, buckets come in handy, don't they? So that was all good. We brought two cats with us and a dog, and then we started collecting animals. So then we realized we had to have paddocks fenced and gates, and we've got three small paddocks and it works really well. We've learned over the years what number of animals we can maintain on this 2 and a bit acres. So at the moment we've got 3 alpacas, 4 sheep, 2 miniature ponies, which can eat very little grass anyway. They live mostly on hay and hard feed, some chickens and some beautiful Peking ducks, and a dog and a cat and various family members in and out.
And it's certainly transformed from a paddock with our shed.
It's amazing how quickly things grow.
It's unbelievable that it's been that short.
There hasn't been a master plan. It's just been, so as I said, it's sort of evolved, both the animals and the property, and including all the planting. We just stick it in, and if it survives, fantastic. Because, of course, the majority of our plants and trees, we can't water. We've got tank water, but that's for
humans.
Us, for humans, and for all the things you need water for. But if it doesn't survive outside in terms of plants, it's either going to survive or not. And as you can see,
it's beautiful.
There's plenty that are surviving and doing well. So yeah, it's amazing, and it grows up so quick. That's the other thing.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun. It's really cool. I mean, if there were people out there who were toying with the idea of doing it, I couldn't recommend it more. It's heaps of fun.
But this appears to be a very well-established garden. I mean, it just doesn't look to be that new.
I think because unknown to us, because we never considered what soil we were buying. It's clay soil, which has its drawback because it holds on to the rain, the water in winter, but it's very nutrient dense, we have since found out, because we went on a course. And so you put plants in, and if they're in the right spot in terms of sun shade, whatever they prefer, they just grow like topsy. So for example, that gum tree that you're looking at, how tall would that be, Glenn? The one in the corner there,
that'd be 20 or 30 metres,
something
in that order.
Yeah, and Glenn put that in when it was about 6 foot high. It was just a little seedling that he found somewhere in the paddock.
Fortunately, it's not too close to the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of regret it now. But anyway, it can be it can be topped. But yeah, so the only plants we water are plants in the ceramic pots on the deck and the vegetable garden. And then we've got smaller water tanks off the shed and pony shed that can be used to collect rainwater for the animals,
mm-hmm.
troughs. And we have got, what size are our water tanks?
225,000 litres.
225,000 litre water tanks. And the water is pumped to both the garage and the house and filtered twice before it comes out of the taps.
So when you were running this as a with a B&B on the side, did you ever have problems with the water supply, with having enough?
I think we did have we have had to fill up our tanks on a couple of occasions, and that was because we had particularly dry summers.
Yeah.
So they just had to be topped up, which was more of an inconvenience rather than anything else. Mm-hmm. Although saying that, we did, and this was entirely my fault. I didn't monitor the how much water was in the tanks, and the water went down and down and down, and then the pump that sucks the water out of the tank sucked up a bit of dirt, for want of a better term, from the bottom of the tank, and that stuffed up the pump. So that turned out to be a rather expensive lesson to learn.
Yeah, you learn these lessons. Mm. And ironically, that particular time, so you order water in a tanker truck, and the guy comes and pumps the water out of his truck into your tanks. He did that, turned his truck around, came past me, wound his window down. We had a 1 minute chat. As he handed the paper invoice out of the window to me, the heavens opened and the invoice got soaked. So 2 hours later, we wouldn't have needed his water.
But who knew?
And then when we realised that we couldn't pump any water to the buildings because the pump had been clogged up with all this sludge, we had to contact Pete, the pump man, who came along, and you had to hold a golf umbrella over him so he could work on the pump because it was raining so hard. But, you know, them's the breaks. And so water in, yeah, we now know that we should monitor it if we're having a dry phase. And water out goes into the only system that is allowed by our local council, the Manawatu Council. And it's, I don't know the size of the tank that's underground, do you?
No, I don't.
So all our wastewater and sewerage goes into a holding tank. It's anaerobically treated, and then it's pumped out through 500 metres of hose under one of the paddocks. So it irrigates the side of one of the paddocks.
Okay.
So it should, touch wood, only need to be cleaned out every 20 years or so.
So you haven't had to yet?
So we haven't had to yet, and we do have it serviced every year, and the people servicing it say, oh, no, it's fine, it's all good. We did have something put down the toilet once that clogged that pump, didn't we? And that was another expensive mistake.
These things happen.
And we think that a visitor put a wet wipe or something down and the pump couldn't pass that through. So you can only put, they say, pee poo and paper, toilet paper, down the toilet. And that system works really well. And you can see on a dry spell, the grass is green where those lines are in the paddock because, of course, it's constantly watered. Perfectly safe for humans and animals.
So it's very self-contained, isn't it?
It is. Mm. It is.
Yeah, the days of just having a septic tank are long gone.
Yeah.
So there's a bit more expense to it, obviously, because the machinery that's dealing with your grey water and the sewage is a little more sophisticated, but that's just the way it is these days. You can understand why they don't want horrible water leaching into the groundwater. So
absolutely, and you've enjoyed this aspect of learning about pumps.
Yeah.
Fencing and
you've got there's two choices. Either if you've got a little bit of practical skills and they don't have to be sophisticated, but you can muddle through most things and understand most things, and where you can't, you just get the experts in, and with a little bit of luck and good management, you don't have to do that too often.
And because we came from the big city, so to speak, we thought, the local farmers and so on are going to think, oh, here we go.
Uh-huh.
But they were all so helpful and welcoming.
And they still are. We've got a dairy farm on two sides of us. awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Super nice people. And we, in fact, the summer, oh no, the winter just gone, we were running out of grass, and I bumped into the farmer, the dairy farmer, and just asked, we've got a common gate between theirs, that property and ours, and there's a little corner of one of his paddocks that the cows don't really use, and I asked him whether we could fence off, temporarily fence off about, I don't know, 20 square metres, so we could run our ponies in there and just eat the long lank grass down just for a little while. And he said, no problem.
He'd be pleased with that.
Super awesome, yeah.
And that's the other thing we had to learn about electric fencing.
Oh, tell me about electric fencing.
Well, I think electric fencing was invented in New Zealand, wasn't it?
Well, we're going to say Gallagher.
Mr. Gallagher.
He made his name with
it. So when you go overseas, you know, oh, electric fencing, yeah, we know all about that. And we say, well, it was invented in New Zealand. We didn't know anything about it. We knew you had white lines that somehow transported electricity around them, and animals didn't like to touch it. But it has to be a little bit different for ponies, and it was the ponies we were trying to keep out of the long grass,
mm-hmm.
to set up a track around a paddock, so they just had short grass and they had to go round the track. It's a long way round. One source of water. When they were thirsty, they had to walk to the water, and then they had to spend their day looking for the grass on the track. So we went and bought some electric fence wire and some electric fence standards. They're the posts that you hook the wire onto. And we got a car battery, didn't we, to start with? It took us a while to work it out, how you get it in nice straight lines, and we didn't really ask anybody. Anyway, we did it in the end, and we've now changed the car battery to a very small solar-powered unit, and it is brilliant, and it powers over a kilometre of wire going round. We only need the bottom strand, so our animals, our ponies and sheep, for example, if they were trying to graze up to it, they would feel the charge on their muzzle as they rarely touch it. So that was our electric fencing adventure, and we've even learnt how to make a Taranaki gate in an electric fence.
Would you like to explain a Taranaki gate for anyone who might not know what it is?
Taranaki is an area of New Zealand just adjacent to us in the Manawatū, and so I imagine it was invented there. And it's usually made in a fence with wire, and you just bridge a gap where there could be a gate, but you haven't got a gate for that space, with a number of wires, and you hook them on another post. So it looks like a continuation of the fence, but actually you can unhook it and move stock through. So we've made a similar thing in the electric fence, because occasionally we want to let the ponies or the other animals into that centre where they can graze on the long grass. So we're pretty pleased with ourselves. But I like it to be absolutely perfectly straight.
She has issues with straight lines.
Mm. Uh-huh.
I don't care. So everything is straight.
Oh. Well, but sometimes if we have a high wind, it stretches the tapes,
mm-hmm.
the wire, and so you have to reset your standards. But anyway, that's all good. And so I would say to people, you know, don't worry about the country folk. By and large, I think they accept.
Country folk are cool.
Yeah, mm, we no consider problem. Ourselves country folk now. And if you have a go, people are willing to give you a hand. Mm. Aren't
Certainly
they?
Offer advice. There's yeah. plenty of advice mm-hmm. out there, and people are always willing to offer it.
Well, especially if you're listening.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people have done it before us, so yes. you know. So there's people out there that know heaps more than us.
And now we've even been asked to help people with moving stock, and you know, so we must look like we know what we're doing.
It's
the gumboots.
The old coat.
Yeah. If you've got plenty of mud on your gumboots, you look pretty official.
So if you were doing it again, or if you were talking to someone who was about to do it, now they're going to go and buy a paddock.
Yes.
And they're going to transform it into something as beautiful as this. I mean, this is a beautiful house you've built, great gardens, very friendly animals. Mm. What would you be telling them to do? What would your advice be?
Well, I think do your homework. Glenn got a very large piece of brown paper and drew to scale the piece of land. And then we spent a lot of time moving around pieces, templates that might be the house size and might be the water tanks. And
so the idea was to orientate, with the piece of paper in front of you, orientate the buildings in relation to where the sun was going to come up and when it was going to go down. So you, if you knew the basic design of the house that we were either going to move on to your property or have built, you could figure out the best way to configure the house in terms of the sun, if you wanted more sun in the morning, and then think where the rooms are orientated inside a house. So for us, we wanted morning sunshine, so we put our bedroom on that side of the house. We were fortunate that we were able to build a house, and so we made sure that our bedroom is in the coming up east side of the sun, and then the living areas were sort of oriented more towards afternoon sun, where we were more likely to be in the afternoon. So having a scale piece of paper and a couple of templates for buildings on it, you can move it around and work out what you want.
And I would say talk to your council, get to know what they require, because different councils have different requirements in terms of water in, water out, where you can build the house in relation to your boundary, what animals you could keep and can't keep. And sometimes you can buy a piece of land and it has a covenant on it put in place by the vendor that says, for example, no poultry or no roosters. Or so we looked at pieces of land like that, didn't we, and said, well, we don't want to be bound by those sorts of things. So I think it's important that you know what you're buying when you buy it and what's allowed to happen on it.
And I think the other thing to think about is if you've got a couple of two or three or more acres, you have to be able to think about what is going to happen to the grass. So for us, we bought an empty paddock, so we had 2 acres of grass. Were we going to have animals grazing it? If so, how big are the paddocks? How much garden do you want? Gardens are fantastic, but they do take a lot of maintenance. So again, it's quite handy to have that piece of paper. Once you've sorted out your house, figure out how big you want your garden and therefore how much work you want to put in it, because everything needs to be maintained. And then everything else in terms of what's left can be grazed by animals. Or if you don't want animals, you just spend a long time on a mower. Or you plant like crazy and create, you know, a heavily treed
landscape.
I was keen to have as much production
food production as we could. So we used to breed our own lambs and we would eat some and sell some. We've got eggs, we've got sheep wool, alpaca fiber, vegetable gardens,
big raised gardens,
fruit trees and so on. So I just think you're taking 2 acres out of possible food production. We should produce as much as we can to our ability, and we could probably do a lot more, but we like what we're doing and it's not too onerous.
It's still a pleasure.
Yes, well, it is for me. I love it, absolutely love it. And now that I'm getting older and people say, oh, you know, how much longer are you going to be able to continue, I can't imagine the day we lock the door and walk away. It'll happen.
Well, it certainly keeps you fit though now.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, mentally and physically, there's just so much on.
Yes, yeah. But we divide the work. It's just sort of come about that I'm sort of detailed gardening and Glenn's the landscape man, the trees, the fences, that sort of thing.
Well, we try. That's how we...
That's more or less how it works. And the animals, well, hands off my animals. But I do like help occasionally. Glenn helps. And today we've just had delivered 2 sheep that don't belong to us, but because we're down to 2 old sheep of our own, we don't want more sheep of our own because they are hard work as you get older. So a local man has kindly loaned us 2 beautiful sheep. They'll help to keep the grass under control and we don't have to do any shearing or foot trimming or what have you. We just talk to him and he'll come and look after them. So that's how it's working at the moment.
It sounds like it's been a very very wise choice of lifestyle.
For me it has. What do you think, Glenn?
Oh, yeah, no, it was a great decision. I can remember going up the motorway leaving Wellington on our last day, leaving Wellington, thinking, what the hell am I doing? Because it was going into the unknown, you know. Yes, what you don't totally know is a bit freaky. So for me, it was like, oh, my God. But definitely, it's turned out to be fantastic. Awesome, awesome community.
Yeah.
And there's heaps of people out there to help you if you need it or you want it. And it's been heaps of fun. A lot of work, but heaps of fun.
Neither of you had a farming background at all. So
No, I came from a semi-rural area and farms all around, and I worked in a stables, you know, so I had that sort of experience, but nothing farming, so to speak. So yeah, great fun. But I would also say that people have to learn to say no, because once the city people come with their paddocks, there's all sorts of animals that desperately need to be rehomed. And you have to learn to say, no, we've got enough.
Well, thank you both very much. You've turned a paddock into just a piece of paradise. It's a shame we haven't got photos, because there's so many trees and shrubs. It's just like walking into a little park, isn't it?
It is, and there are so many native birds now. Yeah. And we've found that with our neighbours in this street, we've created a corridor for the birds. They can now move from one lifestyle block to the other, be fed and watered, and the numbers of native birds have grown significantly since we've been here. So that's a real pleasure for both of us.
It's made a difference.
Yeah. And last night the cat caught a very nice large rat.
Oh, even better. Well done, cat.
On that note.
Thank you both very much.
A pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.